Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton O'Clock. Hutton O'Clock coming a little bit later this week because of the Titans press conferences. Caroline Willie DeMays, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. And joining us now, it is Jonathan Hutton of Hot Mike and Hutton and Withrow. Hutt, always appreciate our weekly visits with you and appreciate you being flexible with us this week. We just heard from Brian Callahan, and we played a clip coming back where he talked about, you know, the wide receiver three, talked about Mason Kinsey. He mentioned Kyle Phillips. He mentioned Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. He talked about Calvin Ridley. He talked about DeAndre Hopkins. But the three of us, nor Nick, didn't pick up on a single Treylon Burks reference in like a 40-minute press conference from Brian Callahan. What do you read into that?
Well, he's like us. We don't think of Treylon Burks.
Bad news for Treylon Burks.
Yeah, I mean, he mentioned he was asked directly about Treylon Burks at the combine, and you know, it was direct on, you know, his opportunity and time to show something kind of thing. But look, I mean, Treylon Burks could be available via trade. I think that's, if we're just looking at pieces to this team that they would have available on the draft for a team, for a Titans organization that wants more draft picks this year. That's a spot where you feel like, I mean, when we've seen this, guys, you get a third or fourth round wide receiver that can help you now for an offensive minded football coach. And you don't feel like Burks is that guy. I mean, maybe you flip him for a middle of the draft, mid to late round draft pick, and go get another wide receiver if you need it. They need another young wide receiver on this roster. Maybe they take him in the first round. But that aside, if you're taking a wide receiver in the first round, Burks is now the fourth, or the, you see what I'm saying? That's interesting that he's the one receiver that he didn't mention, but maybe it was just by a complete coincidence.
Right.
But, I mean, if you're just rattling off your starting lineup, you're going to get to Burks fairly quickly, especially if you're going to mention Mason Kinsey.
It could be sheer and utter coincidence, but the fact that all of us kind of feel the same way, like, oh, yeah, Treylon Burks is on this team, that none of us really expect much from
maybe
Treylon
he hasn't
Burks
seen
this
him.
Season.
Maybe so. He hasn't seen him. You know, he's not top of mind. I don't know.
You mentioned the Titans taking potentially wide receiver in the first round, and I think that's on the table. Say Malik Nabers falls to the Titans at 7.
Yep.
What would your reaction be if the Titans go receiver at 7 rather than a Joe Walt or an Olafashnu or addressing the left tackle position?
Well, so early in the offseason, I said I would go offensive tackle, free agency, wide receiver. I would go young in the draft. What we don't know is where they have these guys graded on their board. If they have one of these top two or three receivers higher than the offensive tackle, don't you? By the way, we've seen Callahan and the Bengals organization be in this spot too, where they could have selected an offensive tackle and they went Ja'Marr Chase. There was a distinct decision to be made there. And both players have been really good in the league. I don't have a problem with it whatsoever. If they're building for the future, DeAndre Hopkins is here for another year. They've got Ridley under contract for 4 years. And you've got an elite young wide receiver to pair with Will Levis, who they're going to sling the football with. They got to protect him. And the other aspect that we don't know, guys, is the Bill Callahan effect on the offensive linemen. If they draft offensive tackle at that spot, that is signed, sealed, and delivered by Bill Callahan. If they wait and address it later in the draft, that is signed, sealed, and delivered by Bill Callahan. That if he's the best offensive line coach in the NFL, and many regard him as being so, and he is excellent at what he does, they're trusting every single recommendation on that line that he makes. And that would certainly factor into any grade or any board that they're putting together. And as far as wide receivers go, we know this coach and how he opened up describing his offense. Unlike any other coach we've seen come through the St. Thomas Sports Park doors in Nashville since they moved here, he started by discussing the passing game. And I think that's something to keep in mind as we go into the draft here.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton discussing the Tennessee Titans. Now, Hutt, He talked about the secondary, Brian Callahan did, and he seemed very excited about the secondary, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
They have physicality to that room now, and it seems like the way he described it is this is going to be a more aggressive style of play on the outside, which lends me to this question. You know, because when he talked about the secondary, if you're going to be aggressive, you got to have people that are going to get to the quarterback very quickly.
Yep.
He didn't make any mention of, you know, Caleb Murphy or anyone else. Do you think he's leaving himself open for potentially getting a pass rusher, possibly in the first round or the second round?
They need that. I mean, they need to add a piece there, Mace. But from your perspective and your career, the football's coming out faster than ever before, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's time to be aggressive across the league in that regard. If the football's coming out fast, if you're a defensive back, you got to be up on that receiver immediately. And I think the money that's been allocated to the defensive line to defensive tackles, interior defensive linemen, I think that's how you disrupt the quarterback initially. If the ball's coming out so fast, the edge rush, which is still crucial. Don't get me wrong here. I still want that elite pass rusher. Myles Garrett is elite. Micah Parsons, elite. We could go down the list here. I'm simply saying I want that to determine what they're getting. Autry, they lose what they're getting on the interior next to Simmons, and who they're pairing with on the outside. They have to add there too. And they've clearly had this plan where they've addressed some things in free agency that's allowed them some flexibility, but also has centered in on some positions that we know they need to go with. And pass rush has certainly got to be addressed. That front has to be addressed. But they definitely, absolutely trust their number one corner.
Mm-hmm.
And what a difference an offseason can make in the mindset of that. And we also know just through just the watching defenses with Wilson at the helm of the secondary and coaching that position, he wants to be aggressive. He's been through those defenses that have been. And, you know, Baltimore and Philly have certainly had good pass rushes there. The Titans have to have it. But I think because the ball's coming out faster than ever before, while there's still the great wide receivers in the passing game and the odds are stacked against you, I mean, how long have we heard you guys certainly have heard it more recently.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, callers, text line, chat on YouTube with everyone complaining about how much space is given from the defensive backs to the wide receivers. That's changed now, and that's good for the Titans.
Yeah, it is. Now, looking at, I think Brian has done a good job, as well as, you know, Rand, in regards to the this year's draft. I think they've done a really good job at being coy. They haven't sort of tipped their hand one way or another, because listening to him in this press conference, he basically left himself open to drafting anybody because he said, listen, we earmarked some guys we wanted to go after in free agency. We supplemented, but we want to build through the draft. But he didn't specifically say we're getting a tackle, we're getting a receiver, we're in the corner. He left this team basically open, which is a good thing for a young coach to keep everything sort of, you know, hidden, you know, behind the curtain. Because last year and the year before, there were a lot of things that were not hidden. There were a lot of things that got out of that building that's not getting out of it this year.
And a lot by Diana Rossini, huh?
Yeah.
You have a great perspective on this base, because I haven't thought about it this way. I've been geared towards offensive tackle and wide receiver at seven. They've had to address other positions, because if they trade down, if they get a haul for a quarterback, there's not really any guarantee that those top players at those positions are there when they select. So the question is, do you draft based on need, or do you draft based on this dude is one of our keystone players in the first round moving forward, regardless of need? What if it's another corner, to your point? It looks like they've got their defensive backfield set, so to speak, right now. But for the future, if you've got that guy there, again, they've done their due diligence, and I would be mentioning or alluding to the fact that, you know, we could take any position because if you trade down in the first round, say that hypothetically, you trade to 12 with Minnesota, you trade down again if you want to. You get more picks if you're going to address a specific player and it's not necessarily need. I think as far as the first round goes, this is a franchise that's got to get better in addressing the fact that they've got to get elite talent regardless of want or need. They've got to hit on these guys. And, I mean, I'm following my board, but I'm following the best player. It doesn't have to be quarterback, but it doesn't have to be wide receiver or offensive tackle either based on the discussion we're having. If you trade down because, you know, Minnesota is in love with J.J. McCarthy at 7, they're in a great spot given the fact that the first three picks seem to be quarterback. And then we see who really wants to wheel and deal after that. If Arizona is going to give up Marvin Harrison Jr. in exchange for a trade up by one of these other teams, or will the Chargers actually trade down for a team that is in big needs for wide receiver right now? And then, you know, all of a sudden the Titans are on the clock. Their phone's going to be ringing, and I bet it's for a quarterback.
Jonathan Hutton's with us. Jonathan, that was a long press conference we just heard from Callahan, but I feel like we're getting to see what he's about the more you hear about him. He's so conversational with the media.
Yes, approachable.
Yes. And so what do you think that translates to? Like, I try to think about why is that good? Like, other than our needs as media, right, where you ask a question, you're actually going to get a thoughtful answer, right? He's going to try to answer your question, whether it's as opposed to Mike Vrabel, who wanted intentionally, I think, and this is not...
He played games.
Right. He wanted to keep everybody on their toes, keep everybody on edge. He was going to give you short answers. He wasn't going to get philosophical. But what does it mean when it comes to Sundays, I guess is the question. We don't know.
Well, I think from the media and fan perspective, I'll just speak from a personal aspect here. I don't have to agree with everything going on in the world, but I need to understand the other argument or the side, the conversation. I think the conversational and an approachable ability of Callahan here so far allows those questions to somehow be answered. You don't have to agree with the answer, but you can at least understand the perspective or the decision. I don't know if we've always been getting that with some of these coaches that have been through the Titans organization, Willie, and that leads to a ton of speculation. I don't know if you get a ton of speculation with Carthon and Callahan. I think that's good. It could be bad. I think that's good because you at least know where they're coming from. It could really piss you off, I guess. But down the road, we'll see. So I do think that's a positive. I think it also shows he's organized. He listens to the question and gives you a thoughtful answer. I think that means on game day, everything has been thought out for the most part. There's a plan. There's a way to go about it, and he's not rushed, and he's not. He doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like he's faking it. And I do think there are young coaches that come across as that a little bit because they're trying to act like they know what they're doing or they know something about behind the scenes that we don't know. And I think Callahan knows what he doesn't know. And I think that's a huge positive for a coach that is calling plays for the first time and he's a head coach for the first time. He's more polished in that regard than maybe what I thought he would be.
And I think the flip side of that is right now we're in the easy ones, right? These are the easy press conferences. When it gets tough is when I think that style is going to be tested. And if he can stay consistent, that will be big.
Hey,
but there's going to be some tough times, right? And he saw his mentor go through it in Cincinnati and survive. So I think it is something that can work, right?
And Zach Taylor's very much like that. Sean McVay, very much like that. And you know who's been like – he's the most like Jeff Fisher in that regard of the coaches we've seen since Fisher. I don't know. I'm just thinking about this in real time. Fisher would stand at the podium and just, you know, go – he would just have a conversation with him. That practice is wide open. I'm not saying the practice is going to be wide open here. But I do think Fish did he did try to explain some things. Now maybe he was doing it for different benefits or the PR moves, but which he was great at. But I think there's more of a give and take there than maybe what we've seen from Wiz and Hunt or Vrabel.
Talking with Jonathan Hutton, last one for me, Hut. I was looking at an article on ESPN.com. Bill Barnwell highlighted what he thinks every team should do with their first round pick. Stay put, okay. Trade up, trade back, just from that perspective. His breakdown for the Titans was trade up to get your left tackle of choice. We talked about that with Tim Hasselbeck yesterday. He said, if there is one left tackle that the Titans have zeroed in on, then you have to leapfrog the Chargers to get that left tackle. What say you?
I mean, I want to know what Barnwell said 2 months ago when he was writing about the draft. Things have to change on purpose. Yeah. Because they've got to have new content. You can't just repost the same articles in the same mock draft. So I don't read into the mock drafts as much until we get to their final ones. But it just comes down to what's the gap between the two tackles at the top of this draft?
That's the question.
And that's what we don't know in their draft room.
Mm-hmm.
If one is far and away the best one, then you try to leapfrog. But if not, I hear one or the other. I don't hear just one name. So I think they're regarded as being pretty close. Now, system wise, that also plays a factor. What Bill Callahan thinks is the biggest voice in the room with this. I don't know if you guys agree though. Like if they're just, I'm just surface level. I'm not necessarily trying to trade up a couple of picks for one guy. If I've got a grade that's similar to another player that's right next, neck and neck with that guy.
They don't have enough picks.
And by the way, maybe the Chargers take the other player.
Yeah, maybe the Chargers take a receiver. Mm-hmm. They don't have receivers.
Or they take the other tackle.
Right.
That, you know, if everyone's talking about Alt, what if they don't draft Alt?
Yeah, I think it sounds to me like a move that would be made out of fear, when I think this team has far too many needs. Mm-hmm. And far picks to be giving them up to zero in on one player.
I'm fearful of them at left tackle right now. You know, I get it, but I feel like these guys are very similar in their overall ability and elite level at the position. And also, by the way, there are other players that they'll have on their board graded with them for top 10 eligibility. And if wide receiver is one of them, I don't rule that out.
I'm with you, Hut. You're the best. Appreciate you for stopping by, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Yeah, always a great conversation, and you guys have a great rest of the week.
All right, appreciate it, Hut. You too.
Thanks, Hut.
All right, we'll react to what Hut had to say there. Plus, Hutton brings up the question that we've been asking ourselves, that we've been asking some of the guests on our show that watch the tape and break it down. What's the gap between Joe Alt and everyone else? Dane Brugler has his beast. His mock draft, excuse me, not a mock draft guide, his draft guide. He breaks down every single prospect in this year's draft. So what's his breakdown of Alt and everyone else? We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So we just caught up with Jonathan Hutton, appreciate him for stopping by, and he brought up the key question that we've all been asking, that we've all been wondering, and Titans fans are wondering, and that is, what truly is the gap between Joe Alt and all of these other left tackles? Do you feel comfortable in taking an Ola Fashanu at 7, let's say, if hypothetically Joe Alt goes to the Chargers at 5? Can you feel good about taking a guy like Ola Fashanu at 7? It's based off of their evaluation. What other evaluations are there? So Dane Brugler put out his beast, and it truly is a beast. It's like hundreds and hundreds of pages of teeny tiny font of evaluation of draft prospects. And he ranks draft prospects at each position and says, I think they've got a first round grade, a third round grade, so on and so forth. So I went straight to the tackles to see what Dane Brugler's evaluation was of the tackles. Now, keep in mind, Dane Brugler's evaluation could be different than Bill Callahan's evaluation. And Bill Callahan's evaluation is the only one that matters. But it seems like it's a consensus that Joe Alt is the best tackle in this year's draft. This was Dane Brugler's evaluation of Joe Alt. Says, overall, Alt stays light on his feet with the big man agility, body control, and instinctive recovery skills to become a high-level run blocker and above-average pass protector very early in his NFL career. He projects as a first-year scheme-versatile starter with the pedigree to become a cornerstone player for an NFL franchise. He's a Jake Matthews in a Nate Solder's body. Jake Matthews is a 10-year starter in the NFL. He's been in Atlanta. He's been the left tackle in Atlanta for forever. We'll go on to Olafashinu, the evaluation of Fashinu. Dane Brugler writes, overall, Fashinu is a work in progress as a run blocker, but above average in pass protection because of his body quickness, anchor versus power, and attention to detail. He projects as a long-term starting left tackle in the NFL with Pro Bowl upside. So both sound like they could be your long-term starter at the left tackle position. Both sound like they can be your left tackle for the future. Mm-hmm. But it does sound like there is a considerable difference between Alt and Fashinu.
Well, I'm sure there is. The way that, you know, people are talking, you know, Alt up, like he's of any one of the prospects, he is the most NFL ready. He is the guy that you plug and play. He is, you know, what many consider a blue chip player. So the way they have been talking about Alt, it does separate him from the next guy. But like you said, how far is the separation? What is the gap between he and Fashinu, he and Latham, he and any other tackle that's projected to be a first rounder? You know, that's the question. Obviously, Titans know the answer because they have all these tackles ranked. And they just may have it closer than what Dan has it or anybody else has it. That if we can't, you know, get Alt, then let's pivot and get another one of these tackles. The telling sign will be is Alt get drafted, and then they move out of that space, and they keep moving. That tells me that whoever they saw as that second tackle, it was a gap between there. There was a gap. Now, if they stay put, then to me, there's no gap. They feel the second tackle is just as good as the first tackle, who is Alt. So I guess it depends on, you know, if Alt is drafted prior to them getting their turn at the board. And if he is, then how far do they drop down? Because if they drop down 5-6 spots, in their mind, well, at least it's telling me they still can get their guy, the guy who they want.
Or they don't view
the tackle,
the other tackles as the seventh best.
Exactly. So they're trying to get as much, you know, equity as they can, draft equity as they can by continuing to move down. I think it'd be a telltale sign once those first 5 or 6 guys go, and if people make trades, then what is it the Titans are going to do? Are they going to stay put and draft who they think is possibly the second best tackle, or are they going to move down and potentially still get that guy who they feel can be the left tackle for the next 10, 12 years?
My thought is they've put themselves in a position where they really need to come out of this thing with a left tackle.
Like,
yeah.
They've done everything. And in some ways, they've telegraphed it, right? They've addressed all of these other needs, but that is the glaring need. So if something goes awry, in other words, they don't get the first pick of left tackles, and they have a considerable gap in their own evaluation. Like, that's one evaluation that you just read. There could be, they might have them neck and neck, you know, but
right.
if they in their mind think there's a big gap between Alt, let's assume Alt is number one. If the second guy is considerably lower graded in their mind, then you got, what do you do? That's the what if to me. That's the one where you have tough decisions to make, because that's when you might consider just saying, look, we might have to go another year in search of our true long-term left tackle, and we got to live with that. And that may not be great this year, but once again, this is where I go back to my theme. This is an exploratory year. There's not everything riding on this year. You've got to build. The real deal is you want to build a good contending team in the next 2 to 3 years. This is a building year.
And the question, too, is if it's, let's say, Alt goes at 5.
Right.
And Neighbors falls to you at 7.
Okay. Well, that
you take Neighbors?
I think you've got to do that. Like, I think
– I would have
and
no
you,
issue
And you would
with
have
that.
To just say, look, we have to just find a way to get by at left tackle and just do what we can. Find a, take a flyer on a guy later in the draft, and it will not be ideal. But that's where I come back to this fundamental question. Are you willing to not have a great team this year? Probably no matter what you do, you're not going to have a great team. You'll have to overachieve to have success. And that would be fine if it happens. But if it doesn't happen, you have to be on a bridge to the following year being ready to go. Because then you've got like, those 2 years left on Levis's first contract are huge. Like, that's when you have the ability to attack a salary cap and have resources. But this draft has to be good. And ideally, it's probably, if you like Alt and he's at 7, that's the way to go. But if it doesn't, then you've got decisions to make. You can't just take a guy at 7 at left tackle because he plays left tackle.
Right.
If you don't think he's worth the 7th pick.
You don't reach for a left tackle at 7 if Malik Neighbors, who many view as the 4th best prospect in this draft behind the 3 quarterbacks. Now, we can debate that all day long whether he is or not, but I'm just saying that's the evaluation of a lot of people, is the best non-quarterback in this draft. Well, if he falls to you at 7, you'd be crazy not to take that player, even if it's not a player at the glaring need of left tackle. Another thing that I wanted to touch on here was one thing that Hutton brought up. The X factor of Bill Callahan. I don't even know how much you can really call it an X factor, because it's one of the most established and well-respected left tackles, offensive line coaches in the NFL. Whatever the Titans decide to do with the offensive line, if they do decide to wait until 38 to address left tackle, and it's Patrick Paul from Houston, who many believe will be there at 38. That, I think, has to be a decision that's endorsed by Bill Callahan.
Yeah, it's going to have to be, because Barnwell has him as a second or third round. He has a second or third round grade on him. So, if you don't get your tackle in the first round, will there be enough tackles taken in the first round that a guy like that falls to you? Or will the draft be thrown off by some moves made at the top, and you're still able to get one of these top, 4 or 5 tackles in the first 2 rounds, mm-hmm. whether it be in the first round or the second round? Because, Willie, you're right. They're leaving themselves open to do just about anything.
I think they should be.
And they should be, because it's not like, they plug some holes via free agency, but they want to develop the team through the draft. So it's telling that they didn't go get a left tackle. They didn't go get an edge rusher, like a bona fide edge rusher. What they did go get is a receiver and 2 corners and a center. So they deliberately went out and got that. They didn't deliberately go out and get a defensive end or a tackle. So to me, say if someone does take Alt, I think it leaves them completely open to do whatever they want. Because now you've taken that pressure of me, in a sense, it's pressure, but it's not, of drafting Oat. Now you draft Oat. I'm open for business, for one, because now I can move down in the draft.
Could also say, well, now we no longer have the privilege of taking that left tackle, so what do we do?
Yeah, and you're right. The guys that we have under Oat, maybe they don't see them as top 7 picks. So let's move down in the draft. And then they see how the draft is going. And they may even move down a little bit more, knowing that if we move down 2 or 3 more spots, those tackles that we were looking at and evaluating, they're all still there. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking like the top 4 or 5 tackles.
Yeah.
Everybody's there except more than likely Oat and maybe Fashanu. Those 2 guys are gone, but the other 2 or 3 that have first round grades, they're still here. So we can move back enough, build up the equity in our draft, get more draft picks, but we're still able to get the guy that we feel that will fill the void at left tackle for the next 10, 12 years.
All right, coming up next, the Predators clinch last night. All they needed was 1 point, and they got that 1 point, and then they lost in overtime. But it was okay because they clinched the playoffs anyways. But now we've had the conversation. We've heard a lot from our callers and texters about now that they're in, what's the expectation once they are playing in the playoffs? We'll get into a bunch of your thoughts on that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
I know you would like to win, but you guys get the points, you clinch up the playoff berth, and I just, what do you think of that accomplishment for your group, I guess?
First of all, I proud of the process that we believed in and the confidence we had and trusting what we do. And we don't always get rewarded for it, but we did tonight. Obviously, it was a big point to get. I love for the home crowd, especially, with the McCarron fight, I thought really got them going, and they kind of carried us through the third period. It would have been nice to get them a win. But again, just the resiliency our group showed. And the, like I said, the confidence. And we were going to have it easy. Unfortunately, that's just the way we are. And we don't mind it hard. And tonight was hard.
That was Andrew Burnett after the Predators' 4-3 overtime loss to the Jets last night. Like Andrew Burnett said, yeah, it would have been nice to get a win. Of course it's always nice to get a win. But Willie, I'm sure in the arena last night, it didn't feel like that was a loss.
No, it was, in a way, it's like you don't want to. Now that you know you're in the playoffs, from here, it's just kind of like, look. Save your bounces for the playoff games. Like, there's going to be a playoff game where you need to get a little lucky, where maybe it doesn't come easy. You just heard Andrew Burnett say sometimes things are difficult. So the win in overtime would have been gravy last night. The ovation that the team got, I love the awareness of the crowd. They knew as time was ticking down in regulation that was really the key. And so they were cheering at the end of regulation like they cheer when the team wins.
Yeah.
Because they knew that was the goal of last night. So it was a little bit of a anticlimactic finish, but that's fine. I think the other part of Andrew Burnett's press conference last night that I thought was really telling, they asked him about the underdog thing. He said, you feel like you're underdogs? You think you've been having a chip on your shoulder kind of thing? He goes, I do think – he started off a little hesitant, and he said, I do think we've worn that tag a little bit, and we kind of like that tag. He says, I, as a player, kind of wore that tag, and I kind of like that. And he kind of ended with a little bit of he doesn't talk a lot of trash at all, Burnett, but he was kind of like, we kind of like proving people wrong. And that's what I think this team should be commended for, especially when they were sitting there at 5-10, and people were like, see, what are they doing?
Tell them away.
Why did they sign O'Reilly? They should have just tanked. They should have just built for the future. And so the turnaround has got to be satisfying internally. And I think, he could say more, but he's not that kind of guy. Yeah. They're going to keep it internal. But
say in the locker room.
It's very satisfying, and I do think he also used the word confidence. Mm-hmm. The confidence that they had last night when they were behind 3-1 and they could have said, let's just take our chances with Chicago. Well, we can get a point in there, Chicago, Columbus, we'll get one in there. But the confidence of – oh, no, we're not going away tonight. And Connor Hellebuck's in goal, still no problem. We're going to come back and make this a game and take over the game. I think that is only building their confidence. Mm-hmm. Like, I the game in Colorado where they were up 4-2 and then they lost McDonough, I think they walked out of that game, even though they ended up losing 7-4. They were like, you know what? We didn't feel like we were overmatched against Colorado here in Colorado, the team with the best home record. So I think regardless of whether it's Dallas or Vancouver, and overwhelming odds would tell you it's going to be one of those two. Now, I think they will walk into that first round with confidence.
I think the biggest obstacle or hurdle moving forward for Coach Bruno is now that we've made the playoffs, how do I keep this team focused? Because even with three games left, they got to remain focused as a team. Even though you've made the playoffs, you pretty much know which one of these teams you're going to play. You still got to stay focused. You still got to stay dialed in. As my son says, you still got to stay locked in. Because if you don't stay locked in, you then can't expect. I don't think this is a team that can just all of a sudden turn it on. I think they got to maintain that level of concentration. They got to maintain that level of being locked in, even knowing that they have a playoff spot locked up. They still have to have that level of we're locked in. We know what it's going to take to beat either one of these teams. So we can't afford to, even in rest, we can't afford to not think about our opponent moving forward.
Well said, because I go back to something we've discussed. They end on Monday. Mm-hmm. The last game is Monday. That's in Pittsburgh. The playoffs don't start until Saturday, I think, and there's a chance that Nashville doesn't play on the first day of the playoffs. So there's going to be a gap. We've seen in the past, say, a football team, an NFL team that gets the bye in the first round. And I'll go back to the 2008 Titans, mm-hmm. who locked up the number one seed but with a win over Pittsburgh. And then they kind of mailed it in the last regular season game, got crushed, rested everybody, and then I thought they were rusty. It didn't play a good game against your Ravens, mm-hmm. teammates, and they fumbled three times inside the 10-yard line. It was a nightmare game, and they lost. Baseball teams, you know, who roll through. They clinch early, and then they have like a week off. You kind of I think a big thing for you, mm-hmm. that you're saying, D-Mace, is keep the focus. Stay tuned in from now until that first playoff game. That's going to be a challenge.
And now we can actually talk about it.
We can talk about it. They got the X. They got an X.
It happened.
They're in. No more. Worry Wart Willie.
No more Worry Wart
Willie is out of here.
At least
he's
on vacation for the next week or so.
Yes.
And then we'll start worrying again once we get to the playoffs. But we are in the playoffs. Hat tip to Max Hurst there. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company's up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.